And of course, we get support for KXC comes from the Minnesota Historical Society. Forest History Center in Grand Rapids is now open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. Fall hours, including horse-drawn trolley and kayak tours, run through October 19th. Tickets and more info at mnhs.info/forestautumn.
We'd also like to thank Giants Ridge, currently offering their season pass sale now through October 20th with deals on individual and family passes for the upcoming ski season. More details and a full list of passes and rates can be found at giantsridge.com.
And support comes from Timberlake Lodge in Grand Rapids, offering an endless soup and salad bar for lunch and burgers and hand-cut steaks for dinner. Online at timberlakelodgehotel.com.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We're telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Check out playlists, podcasts, and more at KAXE.org.
Now it's time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. A rural Eveleth man died from burns sustained in a house fire late last week. The St. Louis County Sheriff's Office says 63-year-old Dale Wallander was found lying at the end of his driveway, his house engulfed in flames. The cause of the fire is still under investigation. Residents of three townships west and southwest of Cook can look forward to high-speed broadband internet in 2026. Paul Bunyan Communications says it received a $3.9 million grant from the state to expand all fiber optic network to 420 locations in parts of Elango, Field, and Sturgeon townships. It expects to develop plans over the next year and will contact locations along the expansion route once plans are finalized and before construction begins. The low population density grant funds broadband expansion projects in remote or costly to serve areas. The $6 million project is also funded by St. Louis County, the Department of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation, Paul Bunyan Communications, and the three townships. Four candidates have been recommended to fill two judgeships in the 9th Judicial District. The Commission on Judicial Selection announced its recommendations to Governor Tim Walz on Monday. The seats will be chambered in Park Rapids and Grand Rapids. Heather Labatt is an assistant attorney for the City of Bemidji. She has previous experience as a public defender, a law clerk, and an attorney for Clearwater County, Legal Services of Northwest Minnesota, and Anishinaabe Legal Services. Labatt is also a member of the Beltrami County Drug Court and on the Bi-County Community Action Program's Board of Directors. Catherine Lorsbach is the Clearwater County Attorney and has previous experience as a public defender and a law clerk. She is a member of the Clearwater County's DUI Treatment Court, the Clearwater Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative, and the Anishinaabe Sexual Assault Response Team. Jordan Olson is a managing attorney in the Itasca and Kuchiching County Public Defender's Offices. He was previously an assistant public defender in several other 9th Judicial District counties and a law clerk. Olson is also a member of the Public Defender DNA Forensics Team. Kimberly Wimmer is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel of TruStar Federal Credit Union. Her previous experience includes time as a solo practitioner and an assistant public defender for the state. Wimmer is part of the Borderland Treatment Court team, Friends Against Abuse, and the Little Fork Big Falls School Board. Sanford Health is planning a Native American Patient and Family Advisory Council session for 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday. The council is made up of Native American patients, family members, and caregivers who work with Sanford Health to help enhance healthcare services for Native communities. The session will be at the Northwest Indian Community Development Center in Bemidji. A meal will be provided. A Virginia-based tax debt settlement company tricked hundreds of Minnesotans into paying millions in fees, according to a court order obtained by Attorney General Keith Ellison. The order finds Wall & Associates, Inc., along with its owner and CEO, knowingly deceived hundreds who signed up to resolve their tax debt. The court ordered Wall to stop its deceptive practices in the state, refund a to-be-determined amount of fees, and pay a civil penalty and the state's attorney's fees. A news release from Ellison's office says the company falsely represented its average settlement and nature of its business when it claimed to be a local law firm with a record of reducing clients' tax debt by 90%. Victims included struggling small business owners and individuals caring for family members with major illnesses and injuries. In the release, Ellison says, quote, "Preying on folks facing financial hardship is as low as it gets, which makes Wall & Associates' deception and conning of Minnesotans looking for help with tax debt all the more disgraceful." For more information on tax debt settlement companies and how to file a claim if you were the victim of a scam, visit the Attorney General's Office website or call 800-657-3787. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
And that was the Up North Report. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to hear more from Morning Edition. They're going to be talking about U.S.-Israel aid and medical state debt fixes, where legislation is passing around the states to decrease medical debt. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Jen Kellen.
Support comes from ICTV. Stay tuned, stay connected with ICTV. Learn more at watchictv.org.
And support for KAXE comes from the Grassroots Concert Series, presenting Larry Long and Pete Watercott on Friday, October 18th at 7:30 p.m. at the Live Well Nightclub and Coffee Bar in Nisswa. Doors open at 6:30. The full fall lineup can be found at grassrootsconcerts.org.
We receive support from Brainstorm Bakery, headquarters of Crapola, with four flavors of granola handcrafted at the bakery on East Sheridan Street in Ely. Online ordering available and more at brainstormbakery.com.
And weather today, sunny with highs of 59 to 61 degrees, breezy south winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Mostly clear tonight with lows 39 to 44 degrees. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs of 65 to 67 degrees, breezy south winds 15 to 20 miles per hour, gusts getting up to 30.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Faudel in Washington, D.C.
And I'm A. Martinez in Los Angeles, California. Coming up, international observers plan to watch America's elections. We're going to hear what they're looking for. But we begin this hour with increased U.S. pressure on Israel.
United Nations aid agencies say over the last 2 weeks, Israel has blocked almost all food aid from getting into northern Gaza, leaving the some 400,000 Palestinians a choice, starve or flee.
President Biden has in the past expressed frustration with Israel over the lack of humanitarian aid reaching Palestinian civilians. Now, his administration has sent a detailed letter to Israel telling the government it has 30 days to increase the food and other assistance going into the territory.
For more, we're joined by NPR's Greg Myrie. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Leila.
So what exactly is in this letter?
Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin both signed the letter. It includes more than a dozen bullet points with very specific demands on Israel. For example, it says Israel must allow a minimum of 350 aid trucks to enter Gaza daily, and that Israel needs to approve 400 Palestinian drivers who can go back and forth to the border to prevent delays. Several U.S. officials addressed this letter yesterday, including John Kirby of the National Security Council.
The letter was not meant as a threat. The letter was simply meant to reiterate the sense of urgency we feel about the need for an increase, a dramatic increase in humanitarian assistance.
A lot of the what's going on in Gaza has been overshadowed by the battles between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon. So if you could just bring us up to speed on what's happening in Gaza and really the dire situation in the north.
Yeah, sure. Israel has carried out a large military operation against Hamas in northern Gaza, much of it focused on a longtime Hamas stronghold, the Jabalia refugee camp on the edge of Gaza City. Now, at the same time, aid groups say Israel has effectively cut off food assistance. The The UN says no food deliveries have reached northern Gaza for the past 12 days, and conditions are getting increasingly desperate for the hundreds of thousands of Palestinian civilians there. And the U.S. says that the amount of aid that went into Gaza last month was lower than in any other month since the war began a year ago.
So does this mean the U.S. will cut weapons shipments to Israel if there's not a dramatic increase in aid over the next month?
The letter does not say explicitly what would happen, though it does cite a law barring U.S. military aid to countries that block U.S. humanitarian aid. The U.S. says it sent a similar letter in April, and Israel responded by letting more aid into the territory. But we can't ignore the political calendar. The Biden administration has been reluctant to act against Israel in the run-up to the presidential election. This letter gives Israel 30 days to act, and that would take us to mid-November after the election, when President Biden may feel he has more room to act.
You have this sort of warning from the U.S. that might risk some military aid to Israel. But we should note the U.S. is also sending additional military support to Israel. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, according to the Pentagon, the U.S. is setting up a very advanced air defense system known as THAAD. This would help Israel defend against any new ballistic missile strikes by Iran. We know it takes about 100 U.S. troops to operate one of these THAAD batteries. Israel keeps saying it will respond to the Iranian missile attack from October 1st. However, it increasingly looks like this will be a limited response. We're hearing from officials that Israel may target military sites, but not oil or nuclear facilities.
That's NPR's Greg Myrie. Thank you, Greg.
Sure thing, Layla.
Ukraine says its military intelligence has evidence that North Korea isn't just sending weapons to Russia to assist in the war on Ukraine.
Yeah, that's right. North Korea may also be sending soldiers. Now, the Kremlin is denying the claim, even as Russia received large shipments of ammunition from North Korea, some of which has been produced just this year.
With me now is NPR's Joanna Kakissis in Kyiv. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with Ukraine's claim that North Korea is sending soldiers to Russia. How credible is this claim?
Well, the Ukrainians say it's credible. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky told Ukrainians all about it in a video address earlier this week. And we spoke to Andriy Kovalenko from Ukraine's National Security and Defense Council. He was briefed about the developments by military intelligence. He told us Russia, whom he calls the enemy, is training North Korean military personnel on Russian territory, but are keeping them inside Russia for now.
As of now, the enemy's plans are to reinforce conscripts and border guards in the border regions of Russia. But it's too early to say whether they will be deployed directly on the territory of Ukraine.
Now, the Kremlin denies this is all happening and calls it, quote, an information hoax.
Okay, so Russia saying this isn't true. But Russia and North Korea do have a military alliance, basically, right? So what does that involve?
So, Layla, that means that the two countries can coordinate to, quote, eliminate an immediate threat of armed aggression. South Korea says North Korea has been sending thousands of shipments of munitions to Russia in violation of sanctions. There's also evidence that North Korea is making missiles to order for Russia, and those missiles are being used to attack Ukraine. We spoke about this with Damien Spleeters of Conflict Armament Research, which is a UK-based organization that tracks the supply of weapons and ammunition in armed conflicts. And Sleeter says his group discovered the remnants of four North Korean manufactured ballistic missiles known as the Hwasong-11 in Ukraine. First of all, he says this seems to confirm an ongoing weapons transfer.
The second thing that this finding illustrates is that there's a very tight window between production, transfer, and use.
He says the missile component found was likely made around March of this year and that the Russians used the missile in August.
Okay, so what's the connection between these missiles and the North Korean military personnel that Ukraine says are in Russia?
So Kovalenko from Ukraine's National Defense and Security Council says North Korea is likely sending military engineers to monitor these missiles. There's evidence that some of these engineers may have been killed in a Ukrainian strike in occupied eastern Ukraine. Sleeter says these engineers could be assessing how these missiles are launching.
It would make sense for people involved in the production of those missiles to be close to where they are being used and assess how effective they are in order to make improvements to those missiles.
Now, Ukrainian officials fear that troops could follow these military engineers who are likely officers. And if that happens, they say it could lead to a Russian breakthrough on the front line.
So does this change anything for the West's calculation? Does it now force the West to get more involved in defending Ukraine?
Well, Zelensky sure hopes so, and so do many Ukrainians who question the West's commitment to Ukraine as Russia continues its war machine despite sanctions. President Zelensky keeps telling the West, we will lose this war unless there's a change in strategy. And he, as well as several military analysts, say Western partners give Ukraine just enough support to survive, but not to win. And because this is a war of attrition, Russia has the advantage. It has a bigger military arsenal, and it has like four times the population of Ukraine. It also has North Korean weapons and maybe even North Korean soldiers at its disposal in the future.
NPR's Joanna Kakissis. Thank you, Joanna.
You're welcome.
In communities across the country, many schools serve as polling places, including for days of early voting. This election, with political tensions high, some schools are worried about student safety. Here's Kentucky Public Radio's Justin Hicks.
Here at an elementary school in Mount Washington, Kentucky, Troy Wood, head of operations at Bulleit County Schools, is surrounded by tiny kids lining up for the bus. Wood says the district is happy to host Election Day polling, but they asked not to be considered for 3 days of early voting. It disrupts their calendar. And if they try to keep schools open, even with extra security, the kids would be vulnerable to people coming in to vote.
It's a decision that you don't win either way. If you cancel school, folks are going to be upset. And if you show up, they're going to be upset because you put kids at risk. So tough call either way.
But local county clerk Kevin Mooney says he needs those schools. He's required to offer early voting, but says the county doesn't have enough suitable places like public gyms or libraries. And with a presidential race and multiple constitutional amendments on the ballot this fall, he's expecting a really high turnout.
The size of the parking lot matters. We wanted to utilize the schools because they are the best facilities in our county.
Mooney is also aware of the trade-off.
The last thing any of us want is for something horrific to happen in a school location.
Ultimately, Mooney, backed by a new Kentucky law and the state election board, overrode the school system. So early voting is back in the schools.
And in this case, this particular change helps me.
Back at the school, operations director Wood says that power to override is frustrating. Ultimately, the school board said the safety concerns were too great, and they felt forced to cancel classes on those few early voting days.
They went by the letter of the law, and the law says he could commandeer our schools if so desired, so that's what they went by.
State election officials say safety concerns are making it harder and harder to convince schools to participate in elections. And it's not just officials in Kentucky noticing this. Ben Hovland, chair of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, says it's becoming a trend everywhere.
It's really concerning. Schools make such excellent polling places. They're centrally located. People know where they are. They're accessible.
Hovland says he gets it. Schools are rightfully worried about increased threats of political violence and the mind-numbing frequency of school shootings. But he says schools and clerks can work together to find solutions, which might mean planning school calendars around voting days.
You know, that's actually something that's very familiar for election officials, is balancing access and security.
The conversation around the right balance between election access and school security is likely far from over in Kentucky. Bulleit County Schools is asking the General Assembly to change the law when they come back in session, so that schools can't be forced into early voting. For NPR News, I'm Justin Hicks in Mount Washington, Kentucky.
This is NPR News.
It is 7:19, and you are listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle, here with Jen Kellen. And we're here until 9 o'clock, and then we're going to hand things over to On the River with our volunteer host this morning, Roger Radio. So, Jen, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Good. So, it's the spooky time of year.
It is.
And I like to watch spooky movies.
You do?
This time of year. How about you?
I do not like to watch spooky movies.
Like, what's the spookiest movie you've ever seen?
Well, I saw The Exorcist at an age
that... That's a spooky one.
I was too young for it. And it kind of turned me off to spooky movies for the rest of my life. I'm not a fan.
So you never dip your toes in, like, let's say Jaws. That's
no.
A bad analogy.
Exactly. No, I have not. Nope.
What about, like, The Fly?
Nope. So in high school, I worked at the movie theater. This is ironic. I've never thought about it. Like, you're such a movie buff.
Mm-hmm.
Such a fan. I'm not a big movie person, and yet I worked at a movie theater.
That's probably the best, because you're like,
yeah,
just helping people see movies. You don't have to see them.
Except for our breaks. When you were working, you could go sit in and catch a, you know, like,
I don't want to do that, though. Like,
minutes.
Yeah, 15 minutes of a movie. Yeah.
So I've seen 15 minutes of the movie Arachnophobia.
Oh, wow.
And I don't remember
John
much.
Goodman's in that.
Is he?
Yeah.
I didn't remember. I was there to make the popcorn. I wasn't there for the
Did
movies.
You get free popcorn while you work?
Yes.
What about, like, candy treats?
Nope.
Just the popcorn?
Just the popcorn.
What about soda?
That's a good question. I think we did. Yeah. I think we did.
Yeah, that is the dream. I love movie popcorn so
it's
much.
It's good.
Did you ever like, eat so much you got sick of it?
No, I love popcorn.
Nice.
And growing up, sometimes popcorn would be a meal.
Wow.
It would be like, okay, you know, we're going to have popcorn for supper.
What happens to the popcorn at the end of the night? Also, did you ever have to work at, like, midnight, after midnight or anything?
No, not that late, because we would, the concession stand would close, you know, I think maybe an hour or a little bit longer into the late movie. Mm-hmm. So late movies start at 9, and then the concessions, like, we'd be out of there by 11, I think.
So you never had to, there was, like, no midnight showings?
Not back in the day.
Oh, wow.
No. It was a big deal that they were showing them at 9 o'clock. That was late enough. So anyway, which spooky movie did you watch last night?
Well, I want to lead up to what I watched.
Okay. All right. All right.
It's been a while since I've been here.
Okay.
Last week, I ended with Cape Fear. Since then, I have watched 6 scary movies.
Are you serious?
Since last Wednesday.
Wow.
We got David Cronenberg's The Fly, starring Jeff Goldblum.
Okay.
Great movie.
You recommend?
I love it.
Okay.
If you don't mind body horror.
Not a fan.
And then I watched the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers from 1956. Good. Great movie. And then I watched Vincent Price in House of Wax.
Wow.
Where he kills people and then turns them into wax statues.
Okay.
And then I also watched Vincent Price's Last Man on Earth.
And
good movie.
Yeah.
So he's the last man on Earth. And then it was remade into The Omega Man, starring Charlton Heston. And then remade over 10 years ago now, the Will Smith movie, I Am Legend.
Oh.
They're all based on the same
story.
And then Halloween 2 from 1981, never seen it before. It was okay. And then last night I watched Alien Covenant, which I had never seen before. And I'm a big Alien franchise fan. And Alien Covenant rules.
Oh, it lived up to your... Did you have high hopes for it?
I had medium hopes.
Okay.
Because
okay.
I remember people not being, like, super excited about it. But okay. I thought it was great.
How many movies are in the Alien franchise?
Not counting Aliens versus Predator.
I don't know.
Which is out of continuity.
Okay.
I think there is 7.
Wow.
I think.
Really?
Yeah.
So my knowledge of Alien movies are just like the little clips, previews on TV commercials, and there's slime. They're slimy.
They are slimy. They're even worse than slimy because they're also acidy.
Blood is acid.
Their blood is acid.
So
and it'll melt your hand if you try to stick your hand in them.
So how do you get rid of them?
That's the thing. They're the perfect killing machine.
Okay.
And Alien Covenant kind of talks about how they got created.
This is why it takes 7 movies, because they're trying to figure out how to get rid of them over 7 movies?
No, they never figure out how to get rid of them.
Oh, they don't?
There is no good way to get rid of them.
Oh, okay.
I guess light them on fire is the best way.
Oh, yeah.
But
suffocate?
From a distance.
Okay.
You can't suffocate them.
You can't?
I don't think they need to breathe.
Oh. Okay. I was going to say you could feed them hagfish. Could suffocate them.
They're probably best friends.
They probably are. Same skincare routine.
So I think you could handle Invasion of the Body Snatchers. That's not too spooky.
That's the 1956 one. Mm-hmm. That might be my speed.
Maybe even, well, House of Wax is kind of spooky.
The guy, who turns them into
Vincent
wax?
Price.
Oh, he's kind of creepy.
Vincent Price.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. I wonder if I, see, I think baseball saves me from spooky movie season because it's always playoffs and World Series, and I always want to watch that instead of spooky movies. And then,
what about baseball movies?
Yeah, I like baseball movies.
The Natural?
Yes.
Never seen it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so funny. Our movie Venn diagram just like barely glances. Like there's very little overlap. You've seen so many. I've seen so few, but the few I've seen are often ones that you have not.
What about The Sandlot?
I haven't seen that.
Wow.
That but you have.
8 Men Out?
Yes, I've seen that.
That movie rules.
That's a good show. Yes.
All right.
Yes,
so
yes.
If you have suggestions for Jen of spooky movies, but not too spooky, that she could watch, text us at 218-326-1234.
No guarantees I'll actually watch. I mean, I'm open to suggestion, but I can't promise I'll watch it.
And you know what? If you have a baseball movie suggestion.
Yeah. I 100% will watch any baseball movie suggestions.
Yeah, so text us at 218-326-1234. Now it's time of the Wednesday morning show. We like to play something from the vault, the KBXZ vinyl library. And I've got an exciting one today.
What you got?
We got Emmylou Harris. Ooh. This is from her first album, Pieces of the Sky. And this song is called If I Could Only Win Your Love.
I'd make the most of everything. I'd proudly wear your wedding ring. My heart would never stray, would dream away. If I could only win your love, I'd give my all to make it live. You'll never know how much I give if I could only win your love.
And that was Emmylou Harris with If Only I Could Win Your Love here on the KBXC Vinyl Library from the Vault segment here on the Wednesday Morning Show. And you're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show with me, Andrew DeZingle, and Jen Kellen. And we were talking about spooky movie suggestions for Jen because she
not a spooky movie fan.
She gets scared easily, frightened easily.
I'm a little
jumpy. If I come
jumpy.
Into the office shouting, she gets scared.
I'm on edge. No.
We heard from Laura. How about Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds?
I've heard about The Birds. I know that it's scary, but I have not seen it. Would you? You've seen it, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I saw it as a young boy. And my sister was forever affected by it. Where I
would
was
I
fine.
Be? Would I be terrified?
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so.
So... So if I start to watch and have to turn it off, I'm coming for you.
All right. But we also were talking about baseball movies, yes. And Trisha texted in, Bull Durham and Field of Dreams, the Kevin Costner double package.
Oh, fantastic.
Both great movies.
They're both great. And we went and saw the Field of Dreams site in Iowa.
And then we also heard from Mary Mitchell, good morning, Jen and Andrew. I recommend Practical Magic. As a not-too-scary movie, I watch it every October. There's just something about it. Themes are sisterhood and the power of love. Practical Magic is a great movie.
Is it?
And I think that's perfect for you.
Okay. I trust Mary, so I'll try it.
All right.
But then again, it's the scheduling. Like, there's so much baseball to watch now. Will I have time to fit it
there's
in?
There's no baseball tomorrow.
Yes, there is.
Friday.
I'll try to squeeze it in. I'll try.
It's only an hour and like 45 minutes.
Okay. All right.
You can fit it in.
I'll do my best.
All right. So if you have not so scary movie recommendations for Jen, text us at 218-326-1234 or some baseball movies. I'm always looking for good baseball movies. 8 Men Out is probably my favorite baseball movie of all time.
And what? Which one had I seen that you hadn't? I'll think of it.
The Natural?
No. It's the one about the Cleveland team that's...
Oh, Major League?
Yes, Major League. That's a funny kind of dumb...
Is it? Do you think it holds up?
I don't know. I can't say that it holds up. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but... Yeah, I can't promise. I do not want to go on record saying that holds up.
Time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary for today. October 16th.
Rod Moberg is celebrating his 65th birthday in Swan River. And Marilyn Roy is celebrating her birthday in Topeka, Kansas. Marilyn's a big Phenology fan.
And turning 74.
Karen Olson is celebrating her 63rd birthday today. Mary Shedd is celebrating a birthday in Isabella. And Linda Brown is having a birthday today in Bagley. We wish all of you a very good day.
And so we're going to play a song that's kind of a pump-up jam of like, yeah I'm here kind of song.
Right.
And this is from the Bad Monkey soundtrack, which is all Tom Petty covers. And one of my favorite artists covered one of the Tom Petty songs. This is Sharon Van Etten with her version of I Won't Back Down.
Hey, baby,
All right, that was Sharon Van Etten with her cover of I Won't Back Down here for Best Wishes. If you have a birthday or anniversary today, text us at 218-326-1234. We'd love to hear from you. And speaking of the text line, we were talking about baseball movies and not-so-scary movies for Jen Kellen, who is a notorious can't-handle-scary-movie person.
Not a big fan.
We heard from Lisa, Angels in the Outfield is quite sweet. I saw that when I was a small boy.
Okay.
But I don't remember much from it. Okay. I remember Christopher Lloyd is an angel in it.
Oh, okay. So I have never seen it, but that'll go on my baseball movie list to watch.
Nice.
Yeah, and you're gonna try to watch it again?
We'll see.
You'll see. You got so many spooky movies to get to.
Yeah, I'm still on spooky movie season.
Maybe November 1st.
I'm not as scared as you
are. I need scary movies with training wheels. That's kind of the level I'm...
See, Practical Magic is a great suggestion. I think you should watch that.
Okay. It's on my list.
It's got Nicole Kidman. It's got Sandra Bullock.
Okay.
Some other people.
Good. I'm looking forward to checking it out. Support comes from Sanford Bemidji's Doc Talk series. Dr. Kayla Scheinheit and clinical counselor Ashley McMartin will provide free information about depression on Thursday, October 24th at 5:30 p.m. Learn more and register at 218-333-5862.
And coming up in a little bit, we're going to be learning about Nebraska's 2nd District and the water wars spreading. Support comes from Fixcon Roofing, professionally trained roofers providing storm damage repair and new construction in northern Minnesota. More information online at fikscon.com. Now more from Morning Edition.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm A. Martinez in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Leila Faudel in Washington, D.C. The blue dot around Omaha, Nebraska has become a critical focus for Democrats. They're hoping to pick up one electoral college vote for Kamala Harris this year. Their spending is affecting Republican Congressman Don Bacon's campaign to keep a seat. NPR congressional correspondent Claudia Grisales reports.
During a cool evening in North Omaha, a modest banquet hall known for hosting small weddings is packed for a political kind of occasion. Even though people of all political stripes are here for a bipartisan candidate forum, it's civil.
This is what should be happening across the country.
That's Cynthia Douglas Ibarra, a local Democrat who's part of a booming Latino population that's become a bigger political factor in Omaha. At the forum, she had an extended conversation with four-term Republican Congressman Don Bacon. He's part of a dying breed of moderate Republicans on Capitol Hill as the party moves further right. His race gives Omaha voters a say on a national scale on whether to keep that wing of the GOP alive or help send it into political extinction.
I think it's ironic I had a primary where I was not MAGA enough. Now I'm too MAGA.
He was attacked by his own party for refusing to support efforts led by hard right members and supported Nikki Haley's presidential bid. But now he supports former President Donald Trump and has his endorsement. He's had success in the past as a moderate, but new district lines, intra-party fights, and an influx of new voters could all favor his Democratic opponent.
It's finally caught up to him, and we're making sure everybody knows between now and Election Day.
That's Nebraska State Senator Tony Vargas. He's running to unseat Bacon from the congressional district known as the Blue Dot and become the state's first Latino in Congress. So Bacon is pitching his bipartisan record to independent voters. That includes work he did to bring billion-dollar infrastructure projects to Omaha, including new funding for Offutt Air Force Base, a top employer.
They want to know that I'm not a partisan guy first, that I'm, in the end, I want to do what's right for our country. And I think that message works.
Bacon's message also leans into his military background, his work on the House Armed Services Committee, and support for Ukraine. But Vargas says that's still no match for the momentum and issues on his party's side.
We are a top race because people are showing up and are taking responsibility for democracy and to fire Don Bacon.
From his downtown Omaha campaign office, Vargas hosted a roundtable with Catherine Clark, a top House leader, to spotlight the loss of access to reproductive rights, a top voter issue. Clark says down-ballot Democrats are buoyed by a national fight over electoral votes and new momentum for Vice President Kamala Harris.
Vice President Harris is doing well here. It is also helping our congressional candidate.
This as Omaha saw a recent population boom, largely driven by Latinos, a voter demographic that Vargas thinks he's cornered, especially with a flood of bilingual mailers, radio, and television ads. Cynthia Douglas Ibarra, the Democrat who was having that friendly chat with Bacon, says despite his bipartisan talk, she is not swayed.
No, he is not getting my vote. Hell no. No.
Bacon is no stranger to tough races and survived close calls in the past. Omaha voters will ultimately decide if the pressure from Democrats to win at a national level could push him out of office. Claudia Grisales, NPR News, Omaha, Nebraska.
The western United States is known for big water struggles. States and cities have to negotiate how to reduce consumption and distribute that water. Now, with climate change and years of drought, the water wars are definitely heating up, and they also could be spreading all the way to the Midwest and Great Plains. Here's Harvest Public Media's Kate Grumke.
On the ground in St. Louis, it's not always obvious how reliant people can be on a river basin for drinking water. But from the air, it's clear. On a flight with the environmental organization Lighthawk, a volunteer pilot traced the final few miles of the Missouri River as it dumps into the Mississippi just north of St. Louis. Here, these rivers are lined with farms, power plants, and cities full of people drinking the water. The Missouri is the largest source of drinking water for places like St. Louis and Kansas City. Outside the region, there are others putting proverbial straws into the river.
Reliable water supplies for drinking water and industrial uses in central North Dakota and the Red River Valley can be scarce, especially under drought conditions. Yet, the Missouri River presents an abundant resource.
This promotional video details construction that's already underway on a pipeline that will move Missouri River water further into North Dakota. Earlier, Missouri tried unsuccessfully to block part of the project with the lawsuit. Duane DeCray, a former North Dakota state lawmaker, says that wasn't a surprise.
That's a phrase in the North Dakota legislature is whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting.
DeCray is also co-leading the effort to build the so-called Red River Project pipeline. He and some other North Dakotans think lawsuits from downriver states are only going to become more common. Missouri's politicians are gearing up for that fight. This year, a bill blocking the export of water from Missouri passed one chamber of the state legislature. Next year, it could have an even better chance of becoming law. Burke Griggs is a law professor at Washburn University in Kansas. He says proposed legislation like that is a classic first step in a water dispute. Nearly a decade ago, he represented Kansas before the U.S. Supreme Court in a water case against Nebraska.
If I were in charge of the water resources of states like Missouri or Iowa, Michigan, and so forth, I would start paying a lot of attention to the ways in which these water disputes have been resolved farther west.
Out west, Griggs says there are a lot of interstate agreements on how to share water, called compacts. There are just a few in the Midwest, like the compact, which for the most part bans the diversion of water outside the basin of the Great Lakes. And at a recent meeting of the Mississippi River Cities and Towns Initiative, mayors in the central U.S. called for solutions to the region's water issues. Sharon Weston Broom is the mayor president of Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
We are advocating for policies that will secure our drinking water, reduce pollution, and enhance the long-term health of the river.
That includes green infrastructure, like wetlands, to prevent drought and floods. A sort of reckoning that may also lead to how best to share waterways and prevent water wars, as climate change and drought threatens a precious resource. For NPR News, I'm Kate Grumke in St. Louis.
This is NPR News.
And you are listening to the Wednesday Morning Show here on KAXE KBXE. It is 7:45. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Jen Kellen. We receive support from Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota Certified Apple Service Center in Bemidji and Grand Rapids, offering both in-warranty and out-of-warranty service on Apple products and computer repair. More at paulbunyan.net.
Support also comes from Grand Rapids State Bank, proudly serving the Grand Rapids area for 110 years. More at grsb.bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
So we've been talking this morning about movies that are not so scary so Jen can handle them for the Halloween season. And we heard from John from Big Fork, spooky but not real scary, The Omen, the original one with Gregory Peck, unsettling, cringy, creepy, but not unduly horrific. Now, I can't quite co-sign on this John.
Yeah.
Because in The Omen, there's a scene that would be probably a little scary. There's probably a couple scenes.
Is it like brutal, violent, scary, or is it
I don't want to spoil it, but okay. It's...
What did you call
it's
it?
It's disturbing.
Body horror? Is that what
No, not body horror.
Okay. Is that like slasher? Is that
No, it's not slasher either.
Okay. But is body horror also slasher? Like, can you use those
No,
terms?
To me, like, body horror is like the body, like, becoming like...
Oh.
Inside out or something. That would be body horror to me. Like in Hellraiser 2.
Why is that an option? I don't need to know that.
And then we also heard from...
Laura. She had a baseball movie recommendation, Moneyball.
Yeah, we were talking baseball movies. I saw Moneyball in theaters back when I lived in Fargo.
Okay.
Good movie.
It's a great movie. Watched it at home. I didn't see it in a theater, but it's a great movie.
Got Philip Seymour Hoffman in it. We got... Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
We got Spike Jonze, the director, plays a character in it.
Yeah, no, that's a great movie. Great movie.
So if you have some baseball movie recommendations or not-so-scary horror movies for Jen, text us at 218-326-1234.
Are you going to call me a scaredy cat on air like you have been calling me off air?
I wasn't going to, but now that you called me out on it.
I told you I would answer to that, so I think it's fair to say it on air.
So now we're going to play a song from our album of the week. The album is called Dance of Love, and it's by Tucker Zimmerman. Zimmerman is a cult folk singer that released his first album in 1969 and mostly disappeared from the public eye when he moved to Belgium in the 70s. At 83 years old, this is Zimmerman's 11th album, and it was produced by Big Thief, who is also the backing band here on the album. Big fan of Big Thief. And we're going to play a song from it. This one is called... Nobody knows.
It might be the first time, might be the last time. Might be a straight line, might be a stop sign. It might be a brick wall, oh no surprise at all. Well, someone might take your shirt and run it up a flagpole. Someone might take your shoes and turn them into a black hole. Except on the afternoon when the moon turns. is green and you don't know what to do.
That was Nobody Knows by Tucker Zimmerman from our album of the week. It's called Dance of Love. And you can hear Big Thief in the background there. I definitely heard Adrian Linker and his backing vocals there.
They are kind of all over the place, aren't they?
Big Thief. She is very prolific with the Big Thief and her solo albums. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like she has two albums a year.
Yeah.
At least one every year.
For sure.
I don't even know how she found time to
to
to be do on more. The backing band for this help.
She's probably not watching that many scary movies.
Speaking of scary movies, we've been talking not-so-scary movies for Jen, and we got a few texts from the text line.
Bonnie from Helga Township said, I'm with you, Jen. Thank you, Bonnie. But there is one scary movie that she loves, Pitt and the Pendulum with Vincent Price in black and white. Just the close-ups of all the actors' eyes are worth the watch. And Bonnie agrees with Mary on Practical Magic. That's a sweet movie. So those are two that will go on my list. I trust Bonnie. I just
watched The Pitt and the Pendulum last year for the first time.
Did you?
I got a Vincent Price Blu-ray collection.
Oh.
Includes that, The Raven, Mask of the Red Death.
Okay.
And I forget what the other ones are.
See, I think scary movies in black and white, that kind of appeals to me because it's less real seeming.
What about House on Haunted Hill?
I don't know, but the way that you
handle that. The haunting? Maybe the haunting.
I don't know. I feel like I could know that it was like not real if it was black and white. Does that make sense?
I guess. What about Nosferatu, the 1920s?
Yeah,
film.
That one, is it scary?
He's scary looking.
Is he?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then we also heard from Carol from Apple Valley. The Shining is hair-raising fun. No training wheels.
Thank you for the warning, Carol. I will put that on my do not watch list.
So my first introduction to The Shining was when I was in kindergarten and there was a birthday party at a friend's house and all the boys in the class were invited, which I come from a small town, so yeah. It's about like 10 boys.
Right.
And we're going to stay up all night and flipping through channels. And the two movies I remember we flipped on was The Shining and Interview with a Vampire.
Oh, boy.
Both etched in my brain. Certain scenes from both of those movies are forever in my brain.
Yeah.
Just scary stuff.
Did anybody sleep that night?
Everyone fell asleep except for two kids, I think. I slept for maybe like an hour, if that.
I bet the two kids that did not fall asleep still to this day probably do not watch scary movies. That's my bet.
You think so?
There's no way.
One of them definitely watches scary movies.
You would know better than me.
I haven't talked to them in years, but they gotta be watching scary movies.
You should reach out to them and find out.
So let us know your not-so-scary movies. Text us at 218-326-1234. Jen's Craven Movies. She used to work in a movie theater. It reminds me of her. Or reminds her of her
of my
days of the
job.
Movie theater.
Yep, the smell of popcorn. I can smell it from here.
But speaking of spooky things, we got some events going on.
There are so many spooky things happening in northern Minnesota. The Northland Arboretum in Brainerd has a spooky, the Haunted Trail?
A Haunted Trail, October 17th through the 19th from 7 to 9 each evening. There are low scare for Jen, high scare, and insane high scare options. Advanced tickets available at northlandarb.org. So, what are your thoughts on haunted houses?
Well, okay. First of all, I think I'd just like to walk through the Arboretum in the daytime. Take a look at nature. I'm there for the nature, not for the scare.
Nature can be scary. You can come across a bobcat.
Or a hagfish. you saw high or insane scare and that appealed to you.
Yeah, I'm curious what that means.
Yeah, you want to see just exactly how
I want to be scared.
We had a haunted forest growing up, like in my high school years. So you walk through the dark woods and there are people jumping out at you with chainsaws and stuff.
As they do.
Yeah. Like, why? Why are we doing this? Your thoughts on haunted house. Have you participated?
I cried when I was in kindergarten going on one.
See?
They had like skeletons on the side that would.
Yeah, right.
Terrifying.
When's the last time you've been through such a thing?
Gosh, I definitely went on one